When you need expert help and advice on issues affecting your business, NFU Cymru, we're here for you.
Farmers Guardian is proud to work alongside the Rock and Roll Farming Podcast. For all the latest news and features from across the ag industry, head to fginsight.com. You'll also find a wide variety of advice pieces to help you and your farming business flourish.
Want to get to know the people who produce the food that you eat? This is the place. Step this way and welcome to Rock and Roll Farming.
Hey everybody, and welcome to Rock and Roll Farming episode 122. I'm your host, Will Evans, and as you can probably tell from the different acoustics, I am on tour. I'm on my way to North Yorkshire at the invitation of Kite Consulting, who provide business services to the entire food supply chain from farmer to retailer and are widely recognised as the UK's leading dairy consultancy and are also sponsors of Eat Farm Now, which I'm involved with. And if you haven't check that out yet, by the way, do visit eatfarmnow.com for all the world's best farming and food related digital content. And I'm on my way today to Metcalfe Farms. Philip Metcalfe was the 2018 Royal Association of British Dairy Farmers Gold Cup winner. The Gold Cup is the premier national dairy herds competition in the UK, recognising efficiency in commercial milk production. The RABDF itself was founded in 1876. It's got really, really high pedigree. And as an independent organisation dedicated to the interests of dairy farmers, the improvement of dairy stock, dairy produce and the dairy industry of the UK and the establishment of the Dairy Show. Each competition winner, in this case Philip Metcalfe from Metcalfe Farms, has the privilege of hosting the prestigious Gold Cup Open Day. This not only provides the farm with an opportunity to showcase their business, but offers visitors the chance to look around, network with a large number of local and national trade companies, and listen to a variety of engaging and informative talks and demonstrations relevant to both the winning farm and the industry as a whole. So I am very excited to get there and see for myself what makes a Gold Cup winner, and hopefully get the chance to talk to lots of people. And if we're lucky, and it looks at the moment as if we're going to be, it might even stay dry. So first person I found to speak to is John Allen of Kite Consulting. John, you must be really pleased to be involved with the success of such a fantastic business like this one.
Yes, yeah, Will, thanks. We're sponsors with the RABDF, and I know one or two of our consultants down the road work with Philip here, but actually it's the first time I've been to this farm, and I must say I'm so impressed. I think what's hitting me seeing this farm is that it just sets a new standard in terms of the way it's so tidy, cleanliness, the staffing here, which I know we want to talk about, because that to me is just taking us to a different place, and it's quite inspirational actually. I work with some very large dairy farmers around the UK, but I tell you what, we can all learn a lot from this unit.
They have a great team of staff here at Metcalfe Farms. It's obviously something they put a lot of focus on. A big talking point in the UK dairy industry is attracting, retaining and motivating staff.
Yeah.
Is that something that you've done a lot of work with at Kite on?
Yeah, we have. We've done some surveys with RABDF over the last couple of years, looking at the staff on farms. A lot of overseas staff on UK dairy farms. I think by our estimates, it depends how you look at it, I think there's between 25 and 30% of UK staff are from Eastern Europe. And that source of staff, for whatever reasons, regardless of Brexit, is going to diminish. And we need to now recruit local staff and go back to recruiting more people from within our own communities. And I think that's a big challenge, but I think seeing a unit like this is quite inspirational.
Yeah, and we were hearing about some of the innovative methods that Philip Metcalfe's gone about to attracting staff here before, weren't we?
Yes, yeah, going into local pubs and chatting up the barmaids and telling them that actually, you know, you're only getting minimum wage and I can pay you far better than that if you come down the road and milk some cows and feed some calves. And now he's got them here full-time looking after his stock. And I think actually, to be fair, one of the great things here is the facilities are so clean and tidy that that's sets the standard, and that probably makes people feel good about where they are. That isn't the sole thing. Obviously, it's going to be a culture that he will lay down. I know him actually quite well, and he's a lovely guy, and he's a very modest guy, but he obviously sets his standards. And you know, we were talking earlier about motivating people, not shouting at them, not criticising them. You know, with our clients, we've got to do, we're doing far, far more training on people skills, because emotional energy or emotional talents are going to be key to managing businesses going forward. We think that's going to be a big one.
Yeah, especially for young people, I suppose. And I guess it's giving them a career path as well, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, and actually, although people knock large dairy farms and say, oh well, a farm like this means that, you know, somebody down the road can't get into dairy, in actual fact they can come here and they could get a job and they can progress and they become a foreman, they can become a unit manager, they become overall manager. So there's a management structure within a lot of the larger businesses that gives people scope to actually progress and move on, which is great.
Absolutely. And what about technology? They've obviously embraced that here. They've had to, I guess, with such a big scale dairy farm, but do you think that can play a part with attracting young people in as well?
One thing that's actually I did notice that isn't on this unit that we're seeing on other units, that is new technology that they will be using, I'm almost guarantee that, is use of remote sensing technology. We've got fantastic remote sensing technology like Fitbits for cows now, which will monitor their heart rates, monitor their cudding, monitor their temperatures, monitor whether or not they're in season to be served. And that technology, not only can it improve animal welfare because you can spot problems with cows before they even occur, but also it saves time. So you know that, you know, you can shed the cows off the milking deck and actually know that you've got to serve them or tend to them, and you don't have to be running around the yards trying to inseminate them or look after them. So that technology is going to really come into its own, and some of the younger farmers we work with, yeah, very positive about using that sort of technology. The algorithms and stuff like that, the records that you've got, it's just fantastic. You can spot an ill cow 24 hours before even a good stockman can stop them.
Yeah, well, mentioning stockmanship, I mean, as much as technology is changing the industry and will continue to do so over the coming years, the fundamentals remain the same, don't they? Good stockmanship, focus on breeding, general attention to detail, which is very evident here, isn't it?
Yeah, and one of the things that's evident on this farm, I was just looking at his figures, he's obviously tracking his genetics with his PLIs, that's predicted lifetime performance on his animals. So that, and one of the things we've got coming down the line that is being used, and I'm sure he's using it here, is genomically testing the animals. And also, so you can select the animals better. And also, we can bring into the breeding herds now a lot more new technologies in terms of healthier animals with healthier traits by using the selection processes of genomics. And I think that's going to transform farms in the next 10 years as well. I think our productivity rate in the dairy sector will go faster than it will do in conventional sectors like you've been familiar with, arable, yeah, where they would typically grow. Productivity gains used to be at 2%. They were always 2% for genetics in dairy herds. I think we've got a period where we could go between 4 and 5% compound improvements on productivity gains, and all for the welfare of the animal, which is going to be a win-win.
Yeah. And looking at the business here, then, for farmers who've come here today and looking around, what are the key things that they can take away to try and implement on their own farms?
Well, I guess, you know, being inspired to be tidy and clean, you know,
and actually,
and I mean, setting standards is got to be inspirational to go back home and think, yeah, maybe I should up my game. I think taking on the local staff and the way he's done that. And obviously he's got very good staff management processes in place because he's retaining the people, and it's important that they're local people, and that's great, and that would be a big inspiration for me. And I guess the other thing is looking at the animals. You know, everybody's been very complimentary about the animals. So although it's a large number of animals, the welfare standards on the farm are outstanding, which is why he's obviously a winner.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So I'm going to bring in Chris Walkland now. Chris is a self-described agricultural hack, market analyst and business advisor specialising in the dairy sector. Chris, as someone who's been involved in the industry for many years, it must be a real pleasure to come to a farm like this one today.
I don't think I've been on a farm like this. Yeah. I think as soon as you turn into the drive, and when you do so, you can't actually see the farm at the bottom of the hill. As soon as you turn into the farm, you see the standards, you see the expectations, because this sign saying, please do not drive on the grass. Mm. And everything is well manicured, and it just sets the right tone for everything. And then when you see the farm at the bottom, my goodness, that's something else.
Yeah, no, it's really impressive. I was when I turned in the gate, I noticed that they've got all the wildflower mixes on the left there, and they obviously for the pollinators. Yeah. So obviously,
I missed those.
Trying to do a lot for the
environment.
Well,
there you are. That's another factor.
Yeah,
another statement of intent before you've got 5 yards down the drive.
Exactly. So, what is it about Philip and the team here that have made them Gold Cup winners?
Well, I just think everything smacks of huge pride and professionalism. I think if you had to sum it up in two words, those would be the ones that spring to mind. They want to be the best, and they are the best, and everything. Everywhere you look, you know, and we're looking out of the staff canteen windows, and you can actually see through them. The windows are clean. The whole place is clean. You know, I can't see a cobweb.
Yeah.
I actually can't see a cobweb. I'm looking, and the windows are cleaner than my windows at home.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And that's before we've even seen any animals or the parlour. It's pride in what he does. Perfection and professionalism. Pride, perfection, professionalism. It just sums it up.
Yeah. And what are some of the key factors affecting profitability on UK dairy farms at the moment?
Well, milk price is the big one. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the one that I would specialise in, and I'm the expert on. Milk price governs half of it.
Mm-hmm.
Costs, I would defer back to John on the cost, but as far as milk prices are concerned, that's the focus of everybody, and some people are having a really good run at the moment. Arla farmers are having a brilliant run. The aligned farmers are having their usual good, consistent run. The cheese suppliers have had a good run. It's not as good as it was, but it's facing a lot of political turbulence with Brexit, and liquid milk suppliers, well, they are at the mercy of retailers and the butter and the cream price, and that's not a good ride to be on at the moment at all.
No. If we take away milk price, what's the difference between what the top 10% of the industry are doing, which they're obviously in here, and the rest?
Well, if we take the top 10% of milk processors, the top would be Arla. This is non-aligned. Mm-hmm. They're paying 29p on a standard litre and over 30 on a manufacturing litre. The lowest price I've heard is less than 25p from Northern Ireland, which is on slightly less quality milk. But nevertheless, the 25p threshold has been broken, so 4p difference. However, within farmers supplying the same processes, some can be getting 34p and some can be getting 24p on the same milk contract.
Mm.
With the same chances of making the same amount of money, there is that huge differential.
Mm.
Why that is it's a function of how well they do their job.
Okay. And what about the industry in general right now? Do you think it's in good shape?
I think it could be in good shape. I think for half of the industry on liquid milk, it's in a precarious situation because of the processors aren't making any money out of the retailers at all. So they are entirely reliant on the cream and the butter revenues, which are not brilliant. Okay, but not brilliant. Cheese should be good, but cheese is at the political is at the mercy of our political masters.
Yes, yeah. So getting on to that, what about the prospects for the next 12 months? I mean, who really knows what's going to happen with Brexit? I'm not sure that anybody does, but what kind of effect could it potentially have on the industry?
Well, the issue isn't necessarily Brexit that is going to trouble the industry, the cheese industry, the most. And it's not necessarily no deal Brexit. The problem that the cheese industry has is the tariffs that the government have set in the event of no deal, because as they stand, those tariffs will allow imports to flood into the UK as before, because the tariffs are either zero or pretty low.
Yeah.
And one way you can see that is prior to the tariffs being issued, the Irish were very noisy. After the tariffs were issued, the Irish have been very quiet. Now, I wonder why that might be. The tariffs will allow imports to come in. But because of no deal, we are subject to WTO tariffs, and they are prohibitively expensive.
They
would stop most of our exports because they'd be too expensive, and most of our exports go to the EU. So imports will come in, exports won't go out, and we can't eat that much cheese, that much more cheese.
No.
So what will happen? Well, I don't know what will happen, and a lot will depend on what happens to currency as well.
Yeah, well, you described it as optimism in the middle of chaos before.
Rabobank, who are one of the big banks dealing in agriculture, issue a quarterly dairy report, and their headline is optimism in the midst of chaos. And they don't just mean Brexit chaos. I mean, we're not unique in our ability to level chaos wherever we go. You know, the Americans are doing a pretty good job as well with all their trade wars.
Yes.
in China and wherever.
Yeah.
So it's not that chaos isn't just in our direction. It's global chaos.
We're still seeing a lot of investment in the sector, though. There's lots of new dairy farms being built on greenfield sites, so confidence must still be pretty high amongst farmers.
We could have a debate about this.
Well, hang on. Are we doing this? Is this going to be edited as a joint interview? Or
I can. We can.
Well, I'm going to play chicken on that one, because I'm going to throw that right back to John. So, do you want to ask me that question again?
What do you think, John?
Well, the problem is, and Chris knows this because I talked to some of the processors, is that those new entrants can't get contracts.
Mm.
So the only contracts they can get will be with a commodity buyer, like, yeah, there's one who does take it in Lancashire. I won't refer directly to them. But, I mean, they will get a very low price in difficult times. And Chris's price that he talked about of 25 pence may well then be for them in the low 20s. And it can be. We've dealt with situations where if you're out of contract and you can't get a proper contract, you can get prices as low as 12 or 14p. So these people who are entering as new entrants and doing conversions, they really need to have a farm contract with a proper dairy. And they're not easy to get. Right. Because the way the world's going is that, and you can see this in the next 10 years, is that processors would like to build relationships with businesses like this, where all the standards are in place, where things are done properly, where you get the right quality of supply and you get a level supply. They don't want to deal with people who are here today, gone tomorrow. And actually what that means is that they'll grow their own supply base. So I can see the world changing, actually. So I think those people who are new entrants, they really need to get themselves sorted out and get themselves aligned in a good relationship with the process.
It's absolutely crazy, new entrants building a farm and a new setup without having a milk contract first.
Yeah.
It's like building a house without having planning permission.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
You know, you have to... Because you have to have your planning permission...
Yeah.
To build your house, you have to have your milk contract to guarantee your business.
Yeah.
Why they aren't doing that, I don't know. But I think it's a historical thing where they just assume it's going to happen.
Mm.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah.
They just assume getting a milk contract is going to be as easy as wink. And in fact, people are going to be queuing up to want me.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
Yeah, and I suppose money being cheap to borrow is playing a part as well.
Well, it's the dairy industry will end up being like the poultry sector. Mm-hmm. You know the poultry sector, I think, because in the poultry sector you don't build a new shed until you get a contract. You get a shop contract, then you build a shed.
Yeah, there's some people are doing that, you know.
Well they're mad.
They are, I agree.
Because the reality is that the dairy sector will be exactly the same in 5 to 10 years time, and that will be the way that we will be operating, an integrated supply chain. For better or for worse, and some of these farmers won't like it because they like the days of the old MMB, and they like it when somebody always came and took their milk and then they could moan at the processor, because mm-hmm. that's what life was like. Mm-hmm. That's what they want to be. It ain't going to be like that.
No. No, times are changing. Right then, shall we go and have a look around the rest of the farm?
Yeah.
It's been very helpful. Yeah, good. Thank you very much, John, and thank you, Chris.
Yeah.
We're going to take a short ad break now to talk about agricultural weighing specialist Griffith Elder. Griffith Elder specialise in agriculture with their weighing equipment. They design, manufacture here in the UK and supply weigh bridges, portable weigh beams, multi-axle weigh bridges and a host of other weighing equipment for weighing on the farm. The scales are a great way to know how much you've taken from the field and keep track what you have coming in and going out. The portable weigh beams are incredibly easy to install, so no need for any groundworks, and can be placed straight in the yard or moved from store to store as and when you need. All of their scales come with an extensive range of recording equipment options and farm management software, and one very popular piece of kit is their cab fob system, which enables the driver to record the weight of their load without having to leave the comfort of the cab. Built to last for decades, Griffith Elder pride themselves in making simple to install, easy to operate and proven longevity weighing equipment for all their products. Philip Metcalf, it's good to finally speak to you because you were far too busy on the actual open day, but belatedly, thank you for welcoming us so warmly to your farm last week and congratulations for being a Gold Cup winner. What does winning something like that with the associated recognition from the industry and your peers mean to you and your family?
Yeah, it means a heck of a lot because, you know, we've always tried to do a good job in the dairy and also admired the other winners and finalists in the Gold Cup. So to actually finally win, it's just, you know, makes you feel like you're amongst them. But, you know, we don't take that lightly because obviously we're still trying to push on and improve the dairy even further, which I think we can do.
Yeah, absolutely. So for people listening, can you give us an overview of the dairy business there?
Okay, yeah, well, we're 1,300 high-input, high-output pedigree Holstein cows, currently averaging 38.5 litres, and we're on, like, a liquid milk contract, and that housing 365 days a year and bedded on recycled manure solids, and all the slurry goes through an AD, so we're actually producing all our own electricity on-site.
Wow, okay. So what are some of the big changes that you've made there over the years that have really driven the business forward?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the last 3 years we've invested in a rotary parlour, and I think that's helped the cows' health a lot because they're getting milked a lot quicker. They're not stood in the collecting yard. So, you know, they've a lot more time to lie down and eat. So yes. I think that's helped overall health and lameness. Also, the cubicles that when we've expanded, we've got onto like mattresses with like a shallow layer of bedding. So I think that's really accommodations a lot better than we had in our older buildings.
Yeah, fact. I mean, I walked through the cubicles on the open day last week in just my boots and walked through the scraping pastures and didn't get any muck at all on my boots. It was hugely impressive.
Oh, right. Good, good. And the other thing we've just done, this is our second year of doing multi-cut silage. So I think we're getting, you know, a lot more milk through you know, top quality high protein silage.
Yeah, okay. So your attention to detail is very obvious, certainly for everybody who was there last week, and everybody I spoke to said the same. But what are your main priorities as a dairy farming business?
Yeah, well, cow welfare and health, absolutely. You know, nothing less than that, really. We'll just go to any means possible to achieve that.
Yeah. And what specific traits do you breed for with the cows?
Yeah, well, we're looking for good locomotion, a bit of chest width, a bit of power, not too much stature with the animals. You know, we don't want them overly big, but also plenty of milk. So.
Okay. Now, you put a lot of focus on staff management, and you've increased the business so much in size in recent years. Tell us about how you recruit and retain staff there.
Okay, well, it's a bit of a long story. I don't know how long you've got. I'm only joking.
No, I've got plenty of time.
Yeah, well, when the dairy did grow, we a few years ago we were on 3 times a day milking, but when we built the new pit, the milking pile, we actually dropped back to 2x a day. So we're okay with sort of existing milkers that we already had in the locality, but because we wanted to go back to 3 times a day milking, we decided to have a go with some like Polish staff, and they came in couples, like either boyfriend, girlfriend, or husband and wife, and all seemed okay at the start. But then we soon quickly realised that, particularly the guys, they were a bit rough with the cows, and once your back was turned, they were being rough with machinery, and also a little bit disrespectful to other members of our UK team. So, but we'd have to have a bit of a change here. But we had a lot of interest locally from people outside of farming wanting to come and milk.
Okay.
So we decided to give them a go, and slowly over a period of time got rid of the Polish, and we had a bit of a bumpy ride because some of these people, milking wasn't for them. But over about 18 months, we built up a really, really good team of milkers, mostly women from the locality, and you know, none of them from farming backgrounds. So that seems to have been a big success.
Wow. Okay. So, and I know you provide lots of training there, and therefore a real career path as well.
Yeah, we've got two people, like Aaron and Christine, who's involved in HR, health and safety training as well, and also full induction and also full training, obviously, for the milking as well.
Wow, okay. And I know also that you're very passionate about the farm's place in the local community there, aren't you?
Definitely, yes. Yeah, because, I mean, there's the old story about us, you know, not us, but you know, big farms having a bad reputation and maybe forcing the small farmers out. But I think that's absolute rubbish because, to be honest, sometimes I wish I just had enough cows to look after myself. You know, I haven't got to worry about staff. And I think if anyone looks after cows well enough, they'll look after you. And there's one thing about your family farm, when you get a price squeeze with milk price, at least you can tighten your belt. So we still have all these wages going out, you know, having to pay them. Mm. And so advantages about having a big farm in the locality, you know, we had the open day the other day. There's so many local businesses benefited with hotels, restaurants and things because people came to stay. Mm-hmm. We host a lot of visits so that when we do visits, we actually charge so much that goes to charity. So in the last year, we've actually raised £1,500 for local charities through that. So we are putting a lot back into the community.
Fantastic. Now, we hear so much talk of sustainability and increasingly the environmental impact of dairy farming now.
What are you
doing there to try to lessen that?
Yeah, well, the AD is the first thing that you would look at. You know, obviously we're generating our own electricity, which is the lowering the carbon footprint. But more interestingly, the digestate that comes out of the other side, that's shallow drilled into you know, the grass sward after cut. And we're hardly putting any, like what you call prill nitrogen on, you know, like protein nitrogen. So that's really sustainable. We like to intensively farm all our good land, but then the rough bits, you know, what aren't as good, we're actually letting them go back to nature a bit. So, you know, that's really good. And so, you know, I think we're doing a fair bit. already, you know. And also going forward, trying to breed animals that are more efficient, you know, feed conversion efficiencies. I think them traits are coming. And also, obviously, lowering the antibiotic use, hopefully, as well.
Yeah. I did notice when I turned in the gate down your drive on the left-hand side, there was all the wildflowers there. It looked great as well. So what about technology? These are exciting times at the moment in farming with giant steps forward being taken. How are you utilising that there?
Yeah, well, we have like two robots that actually go around and push all the feed up for the cows six times a day. So that's saving on labour and also hopefully increasing intakes of the cows. And we have things like automatic foot baths so that when the cows have been milked, they'll go through a foot bath and it empties and fills itself up, just, you know, for saving time and also safety with people handling chemicals. A lot of automation in different departments. And then, you know, looking forward to the future, because, I mean, I see there's things like rechargeable manure scrapers that are hooving the muck up that look quite excited, and robotic feeding, and even potentially, I don't know how far down the line it'll be, but I think it'll come where robots actually attach the clusters in the milking parlour.
Yeah. So what does the immediate and long-term future hold for you there, Philip? Big question, I know.
Yeah, no, well, because I still think the herd's improving and I think there's more milk there and also cow health, we're actually going to consolidate for a few years. And we are actually, although we could have more cows, we feel that our acreage, that we do like to have more acres than you know, plenty of acres, because we do have a bit of flexibility, just supposing we have a drought or something. So we don't want to be too intensively stocked. And that land isn't wasted, because all we do is we just sell surplus wheat off. But we could bring that into the forage clamp if we are short of forage.
Yeah, so it's just staying flexible.
Yes.
Yeah. And
but, you know, and the other thing is my son's coming through, two sons, and I'd like to let them have a go at maybe, you know, putting more cows on and building sheds and things. You know, it's no point us doing it all and then they have nothing to do. So.
No. And lastly then, do you have any advice for any young dairy farmers that might be listening who themselves have the ambition to win the Gold Cup one day?
Yeah, just stay positive. There's a lot of consultants out there that are willing to give their advice. Anyone who's giving you advice that has a vested interest, you're paying for the advice, listen to it very, very carefully. Go and visit other farms. They're the best consultants you'll ever see. Are you ex-Gold Cup winners? They're on top of the game. Them's the guys you need to be talking to.
Yeah, fantastic. Right, Philip, thank you so much for speaking to us. I'm sorry I didn't get to speak to you last week on the open day because you're so busy, but everybody I spoke to there had a brilliant day, and congratulations again for hosting such a great open day and for winning the Gold Cup.
Yeah, no, you're most welcome. We enjoyed it.
All right. Cheers, Philip.
Bye.